you're dealing with, the oddity of it is most of the time as a park owner, you want to buy basically land that's deeded to lease or to rent out to mobile home park or to mobile homes. And so majority of them should be owned by the tenant, which means the park doesn't have the liability of maintaining those homes, which is great.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the show today. I'm very excited to introduce our guest for the day, Jonathan Tuttle. Jonathan, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. So, everyone, Jonathan has just an extensive amount of experience in real estate. He's done a ton of different things. Jonathan, why don't you take us back to where you started and what drew you into real estate?
I was fortunate growing up in a real estate background. My dad was a broker. He had a couple of real estate brokerage offices, about three, up to some one time he had four. So I saw him working during the day there. And then at night, he also did general contracting. My mom helped with that, and she was also an appraiser. So my whole childhood was a lot of times riding in the car, going to the office, seeing everything, the projects firsthand from an early 4 or 5, 6 years old. So seeing that and seeing what the possibilities were, that's what kind of got my first exposure to real estate, basically.
Awesome. So did you, when you were after college, did you jump right into real estate? What did you do after college?
No, I was, as we were talking before, I worked at BB, the women clothing store. It used to be really big. If you're familiar at the malls, it'd be like Guess, BB, Nordstrom. I ended up being the number one seller in the country, which was a good run. And then, the real estate, everything crashed around 2008-09. My income was going to go down about $100,000. Surprisingly, I was making pretty good money in my 20s working there. And so I got into real estate. And literally the worst time to get into real estate is right after the downturn. I hit my first few deals. I didn't get paid on some of the deals because people were so below the mortgage. They didn't have any money left in the bank. So I was basically brokering for free. And it was challenging to get into real estate when I got in the brokerage side. And I think everyone that was around 2009-10 can relate to that.
I have a question about that because, a lot of people say that obviously it was a challenging time, mm-hmm. but a lot of people say to, buy when blood is in the streets and then that was a great time to actually be picking up properties. But what was challenging about it for your situation?
To buy it, but on the brokering side, people were underwater. And so people bought the properties 3 or 4 years before and the property has gone down 60-70%. And for example, if there are condos, what was common, I was out in the suburbs in Naperville. Naperville was supposed to be one of the best places to raise a kid in the country, according to Newsweek or whatever it was. The condos out there, what they were doing is people were letting go because they were saying, hey, the condo association was sublet, just basically lease them out for the dues, HOA dues. And so somebody's like, well, I can't if I'm paying $2,000 or $3,000 a month and you're renting it out to somebody else for $500 a month. They just want the HOA deals. So you saw that happening. You saw, I did Gold Coast in Chicago and then also did Naperville as the brokering area. I had some pretty big listings. I had one of the biggest listings in Naperville. It was one of my first ones. And the house bought it for $1.6 million. And we were listing it for $1.1 million 4 years later. Her husband passed away and that's the market. That's what the market was. It went down and it was, supposed to be one of the best places to, raise a kid, some of the best real estate in, Chicagoland suburbs. And it's gone down 35-40%. During that downturn. So yeah, it was great to buy, but not if you're on the other end when you're trying to sell.
Mm-hmm. So. For sure. Okay, great. So let's kind of jump ahead in time to one of your current projects, which is you invest in mobile home parks, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So tell us about what's attractive about that asset class to you and why you got into it.
Yeah. So going back to my dad, he got into the space around 2005, 2006, right before the downturn. And that's when I was at BB. And that was our only real estate that actually did well during the last recession. Actually, Wall Street Journal did an article that it was mobile home parks were been the top performing real estate since the last housing crash in 2008-9. It just kind of solidified, like, well, I was seeing all the different type of real estate, as I mentioned from the beginning, from the kid. And when the worst case scenario, and I was also, you know, seeing firsthand that this is the only real estate that was performing well, and it makes sense. It serves a need. There's affordable housing. And the thing that makes it supply and demand. There's only approximately 44,000 communities in America, and you can't really develop new ones. There's about, the data is not clear, but it's really cost prohibitive to actually start a new mobile home park. And if that's only after you get approved from the cities, and the cities have they don't like the stigma, they don't like the taxation, because it's just a whole bunch of basically hurdles to get a mobile home park approved, and you're not even profitable for like the first 3 or 4 years because you're literally building it from scratch, infrastructure, and then bringing in all the units. So the ones that you want to do are the ones that are cash flowing for his investors. And I just saw that was the best performing real estate. And then even last year, Green Street had an article that during the last COVID, because everyone's like, oh, how did it do during COVID? I know it wasn't part of your question, but it was the top performing real estate last year. And some, just to give a comparison to like mall properties were down like 30, 35%. Hotels were down like 25, 30%, obviously, because everything's closed. Mobile home parks were up 12%. Next closest was industrial, 10%, because everyone's shopping e-commerce. And then like multifamily, which is a really popular asset class, I think it was up 1%. So it always does really well and just makes sense to the supply and demand. That's what I liked about it. It was because it was niche and like not everyone was in it. I wanted to go to places where I could be better results faster or get, you know, find an opportunity or find my way without competing with everyone. And that's what mobile home parks really first drew me into it.
For sure. So there was so much there, just to touch on one aspect of it, the supply demand, that there is not an expanding supply because cities don't really want mobile home parks. Can you explain a little bit more about why? I mean, you mentioned taxation and stigma. Can you provide a little bit more color as to why cities don't want mobile home parks?
Yeah, originally, the original history of mobile home parks, they were actually like luxury back then when they first came out. It was like second homes, Hollywood, like even Elvis had his own, he had a mobile home park in front of Graceland. About all his crew, like 10 or 15. In fact, one of his old mobile homes sold, it had a gold toilet and everything. It just recently sold like last year or something at auction. But back in the day, it was like luxury homes, kind of like how RVs is now. You know, the RVs kind of took that, you know, you see glorified RVs, they have these $500,000 RVs and $300,000 RVs for those 44 foot RVs. But that's how mobile homes were back in the day. And the majority of the parks were developed in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and up a little bit into the 90s. And so basically the cities, like local governments, just give you a context, like for the real estate taxes, the park owner pays the bulk of the taxes because they own the land. The tenant, ideally in most parks, is it's a land lease. The tenant owns a home. Well, in a typical mobile home, it's leased here in the Midwest, and every state's different, but it's significantly less taxes than it would be for you to have a live in a house across the street. So if you're in the mobile home and you get the same school, same fire, same police, all the same benefits of being that part of that community, but you're probably paying 10 or 15, 20 bucks a month or $200 a year for real estate taxes. And across the street, how much is it? $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 for $80,000 or $100,000 house? I saw this in Illinois. It's really ridiculous, but it's significantly less.
That's because they're paying on the value of the building, or because
you're basically paying for it. Mobile homes are titled like a car, so they're charging it like a car.
Got it.
And so the city, they lose money per tenant because I don't know the exact numbers. I heard different numbers between $6,000 to $8,000 it costs us a normal kid through school and a normal in America, you know, feed them, all that stuff. So if they're paying $200, they're getting $200 to that family and they have two kids going to school. They're losing a lot of money. Across the street, they're buying the house, they're getting that money back. And so that's one of the big taxation things. Also stigma, if it's run down, there's a lot of great parks and there's 5-star parks, which are like luxury, you know, resorts. But then there's also like movie 8 Mile, where you think of where like, it's like, you know, meth heads and craziness and run down. Yeah, there's a few out there, but those are like few and far between, or just the owner, they just kind of let it go. But majority of the parks are just quality affordable housing. And some of the old owners have just kind of let, you know, for whatever reason, they just want to like kind of slumlord it. And so it kind of gave the industry kind of a bad name. And so now city municipalities are like, well, we don't want that. So based on, you know, this park over here.
For sure. So, you know, you talked about how mobile home parks are one of the best performing in spaces in commercial real estate and how there's like sort of a range of parks. So what is it that you're looking for when you're looking at mobile home parks to purchase?
Sure, good question. So demographics, well, Stanford had a trend. They just released their trends of 2021, and pretty much majority of the trends, we hit all those notches on there. People moving away from the cities, moving to, you know, like secondary tertiary markets away from the cities. We've seen that even with Class A luxury buildings where, like, in the cities are giving like 3 months concessions now, which they'd never give that. New York is giving the cheapest rents they've had in like 15 years. So you're seeing people moving away from cities. You see people want their own yard, their own lot, because they've been locked up. Even though everything's kind of opening up, people still want that a little more freedom than being just locked up in an apartment in the city with not a lot of free area. And so, like, all the trends of people moving away, working from home, a lot of those hit our boxes for what make our investment attractive. Also, like I said, the supply and demand. We also know with the, you know, the mass printing of money in the last year, inflation's going to keep going up. We see that it's one of the reasons why Bitcoin and other alternative investments have been like skyrocketing. It's because people don't trust the dollar since we've been printing so much money in the last year. So that, the fact that there's about 60 million Americans need affordable housing, there's only 44,000 parks, you can't really develop new ones. We know people don't, usually the average American, 65-70% only has $1,000 in savings. So, and on top of that, even with the policy is to buy a new home, the average house has gone up because of the supply and demand last year with the supply chain, you know, problems. The average house and lumber is going up, skyrocketed. The average house went from like 285 in America to 330 or 315. I forget. It's probably three. If it's not 330 tomorrow, it probably will be the next month. And so, yeah, it's great if you own the house, but the person that makes $15 an hour or $18 an hour at Amazon in their warehouse, which is 50% of the jobs in the last decade, have been that range of $30,000. An average American makes about $33,000, actually. Well, they can't go buy a $300,000 house, or if they can, it's going to be almost all their money. It's not, that's why they can't save. They can't take their kids on vacation. And like, what's the better alternative? Well, let's get in the home that's $400 a month and utilities are $100 and they own it in a few years and they're saving $1,500 a month or $18,000 a year. And that provides that safety net and that provides that equity, basically, if they're buying a house. And then they don't have, they're a little more freedom to do what they want and have a better quality of life. So when you understand that kind of dynamic, it makes it really appealing to most people that fit that income, you know. And from an investor, well, if you can't, you know, supply and demand is one of the best, you know, if you control the supply and there's crazy demand where you control it, basically, it's always going to be appealing.
Totally. Yeah. I really like how you laid out that perspective on why mobile home parks are appealing and affordable housing for folks. So what are some of the issues that, when you buy a park, what are you going in there trying to do? And what are some of the challenges that you face?
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-cap.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
The challenges and opportunities, so I probably should have brought this up because yes, this was part of the last question, I'm sorry. Yeah, so the trends, like I was saying, like, when you're looking for a park, you want to make sure the average house is about 100,000 above in the area. You want to make sure that there's, you know, some population growth, there's factory jobs, Walmarts, government jobs, like post office, because those jobs don't really go anywhere. You know, Walmart, Targets, things like those big box retailers that aren't going to be affected by, you know, e-commerce, or actually only benefit actually from the e-commerce because people have to go pick them up anyway half the time. So you look for that. And then for operationals, like, for when you're buying a park, remember, these are mom and pop owners. Like I said, 60s, 70s, 80s originally developed it. So not tech friendly or tech savvy. So probably don't have a website. They probably don't know how to use Facebook Marketplace or Craigslist. They're still doing old school bandit signs, which still work. Sign in the window, sign on the front of the park, sign at the local laundromat, tearaways. That works. It definitely works. But if you spend $0 and 0 cents and spend 2 minutes on a Facebook Marketplace post and Craigslist, you're going to have way better, you know, marketing for free. And then throw up, you know, basic Squarespace, or if you want to go high-end website, but you don't have to. you're going to be a lot easier to command a higher rent to the tenants and more pride of ownership. And then when you're taking over the park, you want to just digitize even the payment process. Like I said, these are mom and pop owners. Well, now they have like some of the same stuff like rent manager, some of the same systems like Yardi from like a typical Class B or Class A apartment building has like payment systems. People are used to like dropping off checks and going to the local bank. Well, if you could streamline and make it more efficient, you're going to have obviously operational efficiencies and lower costs. So you can keep track of the payments better by using online payments, marketing online, and then just having better oversight of the management. Sometimes they have their friends or some of their friends or family do their management, and they pay them like 30, 40 grand a year for something that should be like $10,000 for management. So you see like little ways to improve the operational efficiency digitally, and then also ways to cost, just like any business, just like how private equity does. And then also make CapEx improvements, bring in some amenities, beautify the park, put the front entryway, put some new flowers, new roads, cut down trees that could be hazardous, put in, you know, a little doggy park with a little fire hydrant, throw in some grills, some picnic tables, power wash some of the units for the people that don't have a lot of money. And then you can start ethically raising rents, and that's where you really build your, you know, cash flow and also equity in the, you know, the business right away.
For sure. Do you have to kick out or find a way to, you know, sort of deal with what, you know, you might consider problem tenants?
Yeah, it's a good question. So one thing when you even when you're quiet in a park, you want to do, you go there, rent a car, act like you're moving your mom or grandma in there, and just drive, talk to tenants, talk to residents, say, how's the park here? How's it run? In the park world, you have to actually go there and actually boots in the ground. You can't just be like, hey, I saw this on mobile home park store, or a broker sent it to me and I'm going to buy it. Now you're looking at it. I saw somebody put that on Instagram. I was like, I wasn't going to comment on it. Like, you're the one that if I ever find a park that it was like terrible and like somebody wants to buy it, then nobody will buy it. I'm going to send it to that person because that's like the worst advice ever. Don't follow people on Instagram talking about how to buy a multi-million-dollar real estate without ever looking at it. And the most important real estate to actually look in person is mobile home parks, because you need to do what you just said. Find out the tenants, like literally any of the homes that are owned by the park, you need to literally go in there. The park owner is going to be like, oh yeah, it's great, it's perfect. And then you go in there and it looks like an episode from Hoarders. And that's going to cost you like $700, $500 and some two guys in a dump truck and fill up a garbage bin to get that crap out of there and then clean it out before it's ready to go on the market. But if you have a couple of those, that's a few $1,000s of unneeded expenses, but the owner says great. And if you just bought it online, not looking at it, not doing another thing is you want to look at the water and the power, like the lines, all the things under the, you know, the water lines, sewage lines, make sure that cracked or rust, you know, anything that breaks in it, because that's a huge expense, you know, like due diligence. That's one of the biggest things, due diligence, making sure that thoroughly look at the trees. Cause if you're like in, depending on your area, certain trees have branches that break. And if it's hovering over, you know, and it's got this 40-foot long branch, it's going to go through the house. So cutting down branches, and you think of it's a minor thing, but it could cost $10,000-$20,000 to do that if you're out of park. So you won't see that on Google Images until you actually go in there. So you don't buy it over the phone like that was whatever the person on Instagram was saying. So those are ways that we look for, we add that into the cost or in the negotiation for the, you know, the owner. Say, hey, we like this. We don't tell him we're going to fire his manager. We'll keep most of them if they're good, but they're overpaying them. I had some guy send me one of his parks, a small park, and he's doing about 150 grand a year in revenue. And the guy was paying the manager $35,000 a year. And it was like, why are you paying for that? He's like, well, we have like a washer and dryer up front. I'm like, cool. I'm like, how much does that collect? Like $100 a month, $200 a month? Because yeah, it's $200 a month. So you're paying somebody 20 some thousand dollars over what's the normal for that type of park to get more liability for EPA for the sewage coming out of, like, you know, the washer and dryer unit, whatever chemicals and people putting into that, to then make $200 a month. And the people don't even care, because then half the people are going to local laundromat because they want to go there and they have the little kids areas and their friends are there. Well, there's no value to it. But those are things that you come as an investor, you say, hey, that's perfect. You say, that's things you do, you know, for your due diligence, that's a great way we could add $20,000 in revenue. So there's always like little things like that with parks. If you know the industry, the fact is we're like, you talk to anybody else trying to get in this industry, we're 10 years behind self-storage, 10 years behind a multifamily and technology and all these things. So when you come in with some of those little things, it makes a huge difference. And that's what's making it so appealing to all these outside investors, especially because we're compared to all other commercial real estate, we're starting to consolidate. It's been happening the last couple of years, but we have probably 4 or 5 year run before it's mostly like private equity and big investors, but it's happening right as we speak. But you could still get these mom and pop deals where you throw up a website, you throw a Facebook marketplace, you throw in better management, clean up the park, and you're going to hit a home run.
Mm-hmm, for sure. You know, you touched on something that I want to circle back to, which is what's kind of happening in the space as a whole. Clearly, there's more and more attention that's coming to the space of mobile home parks. Can you speak to that and just provide some color on, you know, where pricing is and what you're doing to sort of deal with that and where you see it going in the future?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's definitely changing. And we knew this. I mean, I've been in the space for 15 years, as I mentioned. I knew it was eventually going to happen where private equity, everyone started coming into it. Blackstone is the biggest private equity in the world. They've been buying billions of dollars of mobile home parks in the last couple of years. Apollo Group, all the big players are coming into our space, and they're just head over heels for our niche because they see the affordable housing component. Great if you have the asset and you want to exit, but you're seeing now like the cap rates can compress. We're always typically 2 to 3 basis points higher than, you know, multifamily comparative asset. Like you even look at like Reonomy, which is a research company, software company, SaaS company, and they do each real estate niches and like mobile home parks are 2 basis points higher than any other real estate. That's 1, 2 to 4, they said. I'm like, now we're seeing a compression. As I mentioned to you before the show, we're seeing stuff. Usually it's the coastal. It's highest in the coastal first, you know, the lowest cap rate, I should say. Highest demand is going to be the Floridas, the Californias, just like it is in regular real estate. You know, the house is so expensive. It's only going to be natural that the mobile home parks would do really well too because of the demand for the other type of real estate. So we've seen, there was a deal the Chicago Group bought. It was something in, I don't know if you mentioned you were from Silicon Valley. It's outside Silicon Valley. The park sold for like $239 million. So one park, Chicago Group bought it. But that just shows you like that one park could go for that. That's multifamily, like big tier multifamily properties, like class A buildings in Chicago or Miami or whatever. And now you're seeing that in mobile home parks in like Silicon Valley area, or I think it was Palo Alto or something like that. So we're seeing that. And we're also seeing usually the Midwest, like our focal point for Midwest Park Capital is acquiring parks in the Midwest because that's the last frontier. Cap rates are usually the highest there because they're kind of flyover states, but they still have like their very stable jobs, you know, Midwest, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Wisconsin, Tennessee. Tennessee is actually a really good state. A lot of people move in there. We also have Texas, but you see those drivers and that's what's making it so appealing right now. But,
for sure. You know, and with so many multifamily investors coming into the space, can you just talk about some of the difference between managing multifamily and mobile home parks?
Sure. There's definitely differences. And so we're, like I said, a lot of people coming in because of the basis points and it's bringing the cap rates down. We've seen some stuff get into the fours now. I didn't mention actual numbers, but typically we still see 6.5, 8 if it's Midwest. But that stuff was 8 to 10 2 years ago or 4 years ago. And back in like when I first started, it was like 10 to 12. It was like stupid. You're getting cash and cash returns like a normal park, be like 25, 30. And like, I'm surprised people weren't jumping at it then. The internet wasn't blowing up about it. now everyone knows about it. So people still talk about the 10 caps. Those are gone. Those are long gone. If it is a 10 cap, it's probably 8 mile. And that's not the one you want because you're going to pay for a headache. But majority of them are like 6.5, 8. And then quality stuff like coastal 4.5, 5.5. But the management, but you have to keep in mind for the management, you're going to have to hire either somebody on site that knows what they're doing. 70% of the, you know, on-site managers are actually decent. Then you also have some, like I said before, it's a family friend. It's been there. They don't even care. It's just like any business. You can have any business. You got retail and you have your friends doing the cashier. And then you find out 20 years later, they were robbing you for 20 years because you trusted them and they were pocketing an extra $100 every week for the last 20 years. So the main thing is you want to make sure that the management's like on top of it. So you do like call rail, you do some call recordings to see if they're actually, how they sound on the phone, how responsive, how polite they are, how thorough they are actually doing their job. Then you also want to make sure that they're actually, you know, have signed checklists of what they're doing. And then we also have some training videos and stuff that we bought from, you know, other operators that shows them the exact step SOPs of some of the process. But that's the main thing with mobile home is you're dealing with, the oddity of it is most of the time as a park owner, you want to buy basically land that's deeded to lease or to rent out to mobile home park or to mobile homes. And so majority of them should be owned by the tenant, which means the park doesn't have the liability of maintaining those homes, which is great. So that's kind of like the value add to it. So usually like for a comparison for multifamily, usually the operational expenses are 55-60%. Typically a mobile home is like 35-40%, sometimes low 40s if there's other problems, but usually 35-40% is the operational expense. So you have that 15-20% difference in operational expenses because the tenant mostly owns their home. So then when you're acquiring a park or buying a park, you want to make sure that it's mostly owned by the tenants or all by the end. It's almost impossible to find a completely tenant-owned park, but you want to get those off your plate. And even for Fannie and Freddie financing, they want to see where it's very few, you know, park-owned homes. They want you to get that off the plate and they want to see a process, like a system and process, like how you can get this. Well, Facebook ads, Google ads. Okay, cool. they understand that dynamic. So yeah, so it's just more management types of setting rules and regulations. When you take over a park, you send a note to the tenants, like, here's what we expect. You could also clean up the park too. You could set up the rules and regulations to save for insurance, because insurance is big with mobile home parks. Trampolines are bad. Swimming pools, like even like the small swimming pools are kind of bad. And insurance don't like it. And then also a lot of, just like in apartments, certain dog breeds. So the insurance companies collect data across the country. I love dogs. I throw my dog a birthday party for charity, literally. And we give the money to homeless dogs. It's kind of a big thing in Chicago, but you can't have certain aggressive breeds because if one person gets bit by that, you're getting a $100,000 lawsuit. And so insurance won't even insure the park if you have like pit bulls and certain breeds. So you could come in and clean that up and have, here's some breeds you don't like. Here's new rules and regulations. Also, when you're coming over for management, a tip is power washing some of the units up front or clean some of the units up front. If you have some extra CapEx, do something. If it's somebody that's like a senior citizen or somebody doesn't have a lot of money, do a couple for free. The other tenants will see that, and it brings pride of ownership, and then it makes them inspired. You know, the person making $35,000 a year at the, you know, at the local Amazon, they don't mind spending $400 power, or, paint their outside unit. But the grandma that's on Social Security, she might not have that, or it's going to put a burden in her, her pocket. So you do it for free. But then the other park says, oh, look at they, yeah, they raised the rents a little bit, but they, they did Mary Jo's unit for free, and they put in a new park. So the management's more just like stand on top of the units that are park-owned homes, putting new rules and regulations in, and just using technology to your advantage, because remember, we're 10 years behind every other real estate, basically.
Awesome. Yeah, a lot of great tips there for managing mobile home parks. Tons of industry knowledge. You've clearly been in the business longer than most who are currently doing mobile home parks. So awesome to hear from you, Jonathan. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Before we wrap up, will you please tell the listeners how they can get a hold of you and anything else you'd like to share?
Yeah. So the best way to get a hold of me, if you're interested in the fund and you're looking for a passive investment, is Midwest Park Capital or MidwestParkCapitalFund.com. The fund second website actually has access to the PPM, which is a private placement, and it breaks it down. But if you just want more of a general kind of ideas behind it, Midwest Park Capital, so that's a great place to start. And also I have you can see my gear. I don't know if people watch it on YouTube, whatever. It's Mobile Home Wealth Academy is my course for teaching people who aren't accredited investors how to flip mobile homes and then eventually even get their first park. So it's just kind of an avenue. Well, about 88% of people can't be a accredited investor based on income. And it's 200,000 a year, 300,000 married couple, a million liquid. So I was like, well, I should have an offering to kind of get people more educated because people know about this and want to get involved with this. A great place and help the industry out is learning how to flip mobile homes could be a great, easiest way to get started with real estate. Plus, we have our bonus section teaches how to get your first park. And we have five so far. We'll have six industry expert interviews that are on no other course teaching you exactly a couple, 6 hours of like, here's how to, flip mobile homes or here's how to buy a park. So we've actually gone over above and beyond. That's Mobile Home Wealth Academy. And just Jonathan Tuttle on Facebook or Instagram.
Well, that's awesome. It sounds like a really great course. I love that you've provided a way for people who are not accredited investors to get into real estate investing and something that's sort of a little bit more bite-sized, but definitely a stepping stone to doing bigger deals. So I hope you all check out his course. Thanks so much, Jonathan. Thanks for coming on. We'll see you next time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. It was fun being here.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.